Accession number 9889, reel number 2.
Mr. Second, reel 2. What about the ferry pilot's notes? What did you think of those?
Oh, well, I'm sure they were excellent. They told you what to do in simple language.
Did you always carry them?
Yes. Certainly with anything new. No, I don't think I always carried them. No, I mean, all the day-to-day things, I think I knew the drill. I'm sure I did. No, they were excellent little volume. But certainly when I took something, a new one, I always had it probably in my shaky hand.
What about cockpit checks? You presumably had to make some checks.
Yes, you had this long check, which I could probably remember, but which was supposed to apply to every aircraft, you see. So it was quite a long check. And certainly one did it very carefully all the time. I would say there was only once I remember I didn't actually do it properly, because I'd landed somewhere in a barracuda. It was a bomber station, Morton in the Marsh. And I just, I was feeling tired or hungry or something. I'd put down and gone into the mess for lunch. I was on my way north, it was quite a long flight, which you were allowed to do. And I'd met somebody I knew, and I'd had a very jolly lunch, and I'd been, as I say, very much the centre of attention. And when I got back to the airfield, no one had seen a barracuda before, and there was quite a crowd collected round it. And so I went in, climbed up, and there were sort of still rather gasps, oh, it's a girl, you see. And I felt really pleased with myself, and they started it up from a battery, and I set off, went round to the end of the runway, took off, and while I was struggling to get the wheels up, which you had to do with a handle on the floor, and we were rather stiff and awkward, the engine cut. But fortunately, the wheels were still down, and it was a long, long runway, and so I was able to land straight ahead and stop just when I reached the hedge. Well, feeling exceedingly alarmed, well, I then recovered my wits and looked about and realised I hadn't turned the petrol on. So I turned it on, and you could start the engine yourself in some way or other. And I taxied quickly round the other side of the airfield and took off again, and hoped nobody knew what I was doing or what had happened. I never heard any more about it. But it certainly, I did my check more carefully after that. I was only lucky to get away with it. And I'd just got airborne, you see. And if I'd got the wheels up quicker, I'd have broken it, or if it had been a short airfield. So I was very lucky to get away with that, but that was entirely my fault.
How did you feel about having to be so much in control of yourself, making your own decisions about weather?
Oh, well, there were sort of guidelines laid down. You weren't supposed to fly if the clouds were lower than 2,000, I don't know, feet or something.
Were you happy with the idea that you made your own choices?
Oh, yes. No, you didn't have to. Visibility 900 yards, something, I forget what it was now. If it was less than that and you took off, it was your own silly fault. And you wouldn't have got any sympathy if you'd done anything wrong.
Was there any sense of competition or rivalry in trying to get through when the weather was bad?
No, I don't think so. Oh, no, I think we were encouraged not to take risks. I'm sure we were. I don't ever remember being blamed for not taking off and saying that I thought the weather wasn't good enough and sitting in another day in somewhere or other, some RAF station I'd stopped at.
Would you on occasion perhaps even turn back?
I don't remember turning back. You just landed near the airfields absolutely everywhere. And so if the weather got bad, yes, I do remember you just landed at the nearest one. There was no object in going back, really. When the weather got better, you carried on.
Did you expect to spend a certain number of nights away from...
Yes, you always took your overnight bag with you, and you got a pound, whether you'd spend it or not. A pound easily covered a night in a hotel, I may say. And so the more nights you had, you always got your pound. Night in an RAF nest might have been 2 and 6 pence or something, or not more, 3, 5 bob at the most. And so you made quite a handsome profit if you were out a lot. I was always pleased with my pound.
What about social life?
Oh, lots of social life. There was all these officers' messes in the neighbourhood who used to, when they had a party, they would always send a, you know, there'd be a list stuck up on the board. You could put your name down if you wanted to go to a party, and then they sent transport for you and took you home again. No, there was a lot of men about. Great fun. Cheered me up no end, having been a dismal widow. I found having something that took all my energy, and then mixing with a lot of unmarried young of my own age. And so after the war, I married again, lived happily ever after.
What was accommodation like in Hamble?
Oh, well, we found our own there. There were various billets, and I shared a house with 2 or 3 others at Burselden. Very nice, too. We had a maid. Looked after us.
I was going to ask about housekeeping with all the work that you were doing.
Well, she did the housekeeping. All the, this one that you haven't seen, she did it, really. But anyway, I don't remember any worries. It was great fun. We had a lot of parties, and there were always lots of men coming round. I remember once, honestly, of course, we were young. Not very, I was 25 or 26 or something, but still, compared to what one is now. I remember going to bed early one night. I shared a room with another girl, and we were just dropping off to sleep when we heard a noise down below, and got up, and it was some RAF officers we knew. They'd all arrived, and so we got up and got dressed again, and we all went off to a nightclub in Southampton. Full of energy we were.
Were you tired with the long day flying?
A bit, I suppose. No, not really. Because I had a young horse. I used to hitchhike back to Brockenhurst, and I had a young horse, which I got somebody to break in, and I used to, in the summer, having flown all day and then hitchhiked back and played with my daughter and put her to bed, I would then set off on this half-broken animal out into the forest for a ride. Until dark. I was very energetic.
Was there any official discipline as to what you should be doing out of hours in terms of making a
start? No, I don't think so, as long as you turned up on time. No, I don't think anybody worried what you did. I suppose if you arrived with a frightful hangover, you might... or couldn't fly for some reason, but no.
You had women of all nationalities, or various
Well, a few odd ones.
How well did they fit in?
Oh, perfectly well. There were several Americans. There was one Chilean, that's all I remember. They all spoke English. And, this was a Polish one. Forget.
What about pay? What was your pay like?
Oh, well, it was perfectly adequate. I forget what it was now. Rather good, as far as I remember. It was... Yes, I remember thinking it wasn't right, because I was paid as much or more than my husband had been as a submarine officer, as a sub-lieutenant in the Navy. He was paid rather less, which, considering the job he was doing... I thought wasn't quite fair, but we were quite well paid. And the ones that had no, the men, of course, they didn't get marriage allowances, so it wasn't at all fair. They were paid the same, and some of them had wives and families, and they had to make the same do as some of these girls that had nothing to think of except themselves.
Did you get any extra allowances?
No, there weren't any extra allowances. You were all paid the same, whether you had dependents or not. But hardly any of the girls had dependents, and great many of the men did, so I thought it was bad luck on them.
Did you have a widow's allowance as well?
From the Navy, yes.
And you didn't lose that when you started working for it?
Oh, no, you only lose that if you marry again. £100 a year, £30 for a child. It wasn't quite enough even then. but that's what I got.
Did you get any other help at all from the Navy in that?
Though, if I'd needed it, but I mean, I didn't. I was perfectly all right. With charities, yes, I think you could have. If that had been my sole source of income, I think I might have got some help, but of course it wasn't. Anyway, I was still living at home, really.
Can you tell me about the end of the war? Can you remember VE Day?
Oh, yes, can I not? It seemed to be approaching, and we were told that when VE Day was... it was announced, we'd all get 2 days' leave. And suddenly, we found... it was VE Day, so it had been sort of working up to it. And we suddenly found, we were at this house in Burselton, that we hadn't got anything planned. There we were, 2 days' leave, what should we do? However, what did we do? There was a pub just nearby. We went there thinking, well, we'd get some beer in case we asked somebody over or something. And anyway, we were instantly picked up by some Fleet Air Arm who'd come looking for somebody to pick up, I suppose. And so off we went with them to Gosport, and we had a super lunch. And Portsmouth Harbour, I shall never forget the noise it was making. They were all blowing their sirens. It was stuffed with ships, and this whoop, 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 and a terrific noise. You could hear it 30 miles away. And that was going on, so we had a very jolly lunch. They'd arranged that people were riding motorbikes about them. Around the dining room table, I remember. And then we went up to London and joined in all the festivities in London. You know, huge crowd. It was a great night. Up all night. Eventually we met again where we'd left the car in the morning, except one girl didn't turn up. She'd last been seen with a rather boozy-looking Canadian she'd met in the crowd, and she didn't turn up until the next day. We went back without her, rather worried. And he was a dreadful fellow. He stayed with us for several days. We couldn't get rid of him. We did in the end. But we'd been up all night, and then we drove back to Burselton, and we still had another day's leave. And then somehow the bus got round. There was a party at Boscombe Down, I think it was, Farnborough, over there. And so off we went there. We were using up all our petrol allowance. And not having been to bed at all, we went to another party that night. I think we did spend the night there that time. And then after that, but there wasn't so much work to be done. We went back to flying for another month, and then there was Hamble closed down, and we just had I went to Ratcliffe for a month or so. VJ Day was there, but I don't remember anything much going on then.
What were your duties at Ratcliffe?
Oh, well, ferrying, just the same. But then they started disbanding it and everybody leaving. And the ones who had been, unlike the services, the ones nobody wanted to leave, I don't think, and the ones that had been in it the shortest time were demobbed the first. And so it was eventually, it was just the last were the most senior. But...
How did you feel about being asked to leave?
I was glad the war was over, and I felt I could give more time to my daughter. I really left her a great deal with my mother. So I didn't think of... the others started looking for jobs and doing things. I never thought of that, of doing anything else, because, I thought it was the time I brought up my daughter. However... after about 1947, I suppose. I met somebody and I've lived happily ever after, as I say.
Did you carry on flying?
Oh, hardly. I just tried to keep my licence going. You had to do so many hours a year. I did just do that for a few years, but then I had two more babies and I dropped it.